I'd like to call the meeting of the House Higher Education Policy and Finance Committee to order. We do have a quorum. First order of business is approval of the minutes from April the 5th. Do I hear a motion?
So moved.
Representative Isaacson moves the minutes. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes approved. The first bill up today is House File 3789, and we're going to pass the gavel temporarily.
Chair Norris, would you like to move your bill?
Seems unusually quiet in here.
Yes,
it's good.
I'm still here.
There you go.
Higher up a little bit.
House File 3789. I move that be held over for possible inclusion.
Okay, Chair Norris moves House File 3789 to be laid over for possible inclusion in a later bill. To your bill.
This bill is for minuscule and involves availability of some funds that we appropriated to them in the year 2015. And is there anyone from Minsky that's here? No? Yes? No? You're fine? Oh. Oh, do you want to talk about this?
No.
You're okay? Okay. It's quite simple. Thanks. So it extends the availability of funds for that. Again, we appropriated 2015. So they have additional time to use the funds before they expire. So it's pretty simple and non-controversial. And that's kind of the story.
Thank you, Chair. Any member questions? This is a public hearing. Are there any members of the public that would like to testify for or against the bill? Seeing none, and again, no member questions or comments. You want to renew your motion?
I certainly would. House File 3789, I move that it be held over for possible inclusion.
Okay, Chair Norris renews his motion for House File 3789 to be held over for possible inclusion in another bill. Representative Norton. Representative Norton, would you like to move your bill?
Sure. I'd like to move House File 3601 to be laid over for possible inclusion.
Okay. Representative Norton moves House File 3601 for possible inclusion in a later bill.
Thank you, members. This is a bill that is making adjustments to a current piece of legislation that was passed a number of years ago to try to beef up internships in rural Minnesota, greater Minnesota. There were a number of limitations in that original effort, and it wasn't as successful a pilot as they had hoped. In fact, much of the money wasn't even used. And so as an example of that, in 2001, it was a tax credit prior to, I should be clear on that. We're changing it from a tax credit to a grant. The tax credit in several million dollars, I believe, $2 million is what I have in my head, but it could be one. Was in the original bill. Either way, in 2014, OHE approved 7 businesses to participate in the program. Only 3 ended up making claims of $7,432. And in 2015, I just had reported that 14 employers, 18 students were affected for only $36,000. So there was no uptake of the tax credit approach. It wasn't enough of an incentive for small businesses to jump through the hurdles that were needed to make it work. So we are going to be making a number of changes in the program, as well as moving it from a tax credit to a grant. A grant better suits the needs of small businesses in rural Minnesota who are looking for ways to offer opportunities to students and to try to encourage them to come to Greater Minnesota and stay there. Companies like Viracon in Owatonna said they just couldn't use the tax credit for the reason that they were owned by a larger entity, so it wasn't helping their local business to get a tax credit. It went to another parent company, so that didn't work very well. And also, tax credits are retroactive, making them cost prohibitive for some very small businesses. The other issue that came up was small businesses in rural Minnesota are often entrepreneur in nature. They're startups. It takes a while for them to get their feet off the ground, and they just didn't have the initial money to do this. So we're asking Senator Eakin really wanted to give this another try, so I'm working with him to try to turn it into a grant opportunity. And we had some amendments. I don't see them in the packet, so I don't know what happened to the amendments and if they didn't ever make it to the committee chair. So they're not in the packet. Well,
I don't.
So, Mr. Chair, what I could say is if you choose to move this forward, we could do it in a markup. But OHE had a couple concerns, as well as I think Representative Barrett wanted it to be for the 7-county metro area as opposed to the 11-county metro area as the exclusion, and we were going to accommodate that as well. The amendment didn't make it. I mean,
it apparently didn't. We're not sure why.
So what I'm going to ask is if the committee is interested in moving this into the final bill, we could do the amendment at the markup, and I'm happy to do that. In order to make the changes asked by OHE, in order to make it a bill that they could administer. So, Mr. Chair, I can't explain why it's not there, but you can either lay it over and approve it later, or just lay it. You know.
I think your first suggestion is probably
that we'd be happy to make that.
Yeah. So.
Change at a later.
Ready
time.
For questions. Representative Thornton, are you? Should we ask questions now?
Yes, if you have questions,
okay.
I'm happy to answer them. But
okay, the only one is this anything additional that the Office of Higher Education is required to do? Or are they pretty much involved under the current legislation?
Yes, Mr. Chair. OHE was managing this and approving the businesses when it was a tax credit, and they will continue to manage it as a grant program. There were a couple changes, and I wish I had the amendment in front of me to explain what they were, and there was someone here that maybe could,
and
if you want to know what those changes were.
Representative Norton, I guess the reason I brought it up, I wasn't sure if they were being reimbursed for some of the costs, but I see you've got a 1%.
Yes, administrative costs. That was one of the changes. OHE initially said 1%, if it was dispersed to the institutions without them keeping any of the money, they weren't going to be able to manage it. So the language was drafted so that OHE can keep a portion of it and then send some out to the institutions as well to manage the program. Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. That is one of the amended changes.
Members, questions? Okay. I guess the amendment has been found, but it's on a computer.
Okay. Can we just lay it over?
All right. We have someone who has seen it and helped draft it. Our staff is going to be.
Mr. Williams did a wonderful job helping me. It got lost somewhere between his office and.
So at least we can explain the amendment, or he can.
Okay.
And then we'll go from there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So on page 2, line 13, it would strike the language in existing law that would require an intern would not have been hired without the tax credit. So it strikes the entire line on page, or on 2.13, and then renumbers the clauses on 2.14 through 2.21. It also strikes the language on 2.31 and 2.32 that would disqualify people who would have to complete an internship as part of an academic program. And then the language that would allow the Office of Higher Education to retain a portion of the 1% of the program appropriation is on 3.13, and it would just reinstate a portion of on 3.13.
Thank you. I understand the amendment is being printed as we speak. And so we encourage you to speak. Representative Pawlowski.
Well, we can table the bill and come back to it. That's fine.
We have time.
Representative Pawlowski. Chair.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, this was an account that was in the tax account. This was not a higher ed account when we passed this in 2013. And deliberately it was not. So I'd like some clarification now. Is this moving into the higher ed account? So would this money be accessible for higher education under its account, or is it still over in revenue and part of the tax bill? How is this thing going to work as a grant?
We need to look around for an answer. I think we have found it.
Mr. Chair, I'm Representative Pawlowski. I believe this would now move into the 136A chapter, which is the Office of Higher Education under the higher ed statutes.
Mr. Chair, then can staff tell me the amount of money that's left that was not expended?
Mr. Chair, Representative Pawlowski, I do not have that information with me, but I can search back through the accounting system and get that to you.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to ask staff then this question. If there is a sizable amount of money that is not expended, and this is a failed program, could those dollars then be used for something else within the higher ed account?
Mr. Chair, Representative Pawlowski, I'd have to look and see exactly how much is left there and look at how the law was passed in 2013 to see if that money did expire. If it did not expire, it potentially could be used for... that was a statutory appropriation, so I have to check and see exactly how that would play out.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Representative Pawlowski,
I think you're going to have some clarification here exactly how this money can be used if it is indeed now part of the higher education account. And if it is part of our account and the program didn't work as it was initially concocted, it might be of better use somewhere else. And, Mr. Chair, I bring it up because I do have a list here. It's a small list of the 35 bills that we have had heard in this committee so far, just this session. And the total amount is $163,812,200,000 in bills that we have had heard so far, including those today. That doesn't include this one because we didn't exactly know the amount that was in this one. So my other concern is this. We're going to get targets in Ways and Means tomorrow. Mr. Chair, do you have any idea whether your target's going to be anywhere near $163,812,200?
I can honestly tell you, Representative Pawlowski, it won't even be close to that.
Mr. Chair, would it be... How close would it be? I think the members of the committee need to know, because there's been a lot of time in this committee spent on bills, and we've looked at... And this is, again, without the bills that have an appropriation so far. So... Are we going to be anywhere in the ballpark of $163,812,200, or are we going to be about where?
We are not in the ballpark. And I don't want to give you a number because I don't really have one, but it's a fraction, small fraction, potentially. That's the other, as far as I can estimate it.
Well, Mr. Chair, I would suggest.
So, Representative Pawlowski, I think what we've tried to do in this committee, even though we're not sure about the funds and what we have available and targets, we've at least tried to give members a chance for their bills to be heard, whether it's affordable or not. That's at least where I've come from. And we worry about the money later, you know. That's
Mr. Chair, I worry about the money all the time.
Okay.
All
I
the
didn't
time.
Mean to cut you off.
Because, Mr. Chair, I think that we do have real needs. And those real needs should be addressed before we hear bills that are typically wants. And if we have programs that aren't succeeding, there may be better places for these resources than in failed programs, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. We have Is this a clarification? Okay. Let's hear from you. Identify yourself first, and then we'll go to Barrett.
Chair and Ordinance Committee, I'm Nikki Oliver, Legislative Liaison for the Office of Higher Education. And I just wanted to clarify that there was no appropriation for this program because it's in the tax side of the balance. The office was just authorized to allow for $2 million worth of tax credits. So if this was to be turned into a grant program, you guys would have to decide how much money you would want to appropriate to the grant program.
Okay, that's important to know. Representative Blaski.
Mr. Chair, that even makes it more cumbersome. Then whatever your target is would have to be reduced by this amount to make the program work. I'm just offering that as a suggestion, Mr. Chair, and I think that's where we start to get into where numbers are important.
Right.
And they should be considered first.
Right. I appreciate that. Representative Barrett?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to Representative Norton. I know you know what my question will be. There is only one amendment to the bill, and that's... We talked in Greater Minnesota, and we talked about the four counties, and my preference to have Chisago, Isanti, Sherburn, and Wright included in the program.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if you would be open to a oral amendment on that.
I would.
Thank you. I thought you would be. If I could, then, Mr. Chair, if I could offer a friendly oral amendment to the bill, which would, on lines 1.20, would delete the words Chisago, comma, Isanti, comma, Sherburn County, Sherburn, comma, and then on 1.21, eliminate the word right. And yeah, it's true. So if I could add that as a friendly amendment.
Mr.
Anyone
Chair.
Need it repeated? I guess we'd like to have it repeated.
Sure. Just in summary, Greater Minnesota in this case would mean the 7-county metro area, not the 11-county metro area, which would mean the four counties that I'm striking would actually be a part of this program, whereas currently they're excluded because they're currently referenced as part of the 11-county metro area. So the amendment would on lines 1.20, we would strike the word Chisago and strike the comma next to it. Strike the word Isanti and the comma next to it. Strike the word Sherburn and the comma to the right of it. And then on 1.21, strike the word right.
You leave the and at the end of 1.20?
Oh, good point. Thank you. And eliminate the, on 1.20, eliminate the comma after Washington and the word and. I'm an accounting major, by the way.
Mr. William.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that you'd also have to insert an and between Scott and Washington as well.
I believe you.
With that change, is there any other discussion on the oral amendment? You're okay with
it? I'm perfectly fine with that and anticipated it being here today, and it's not, so...
All right.
Thank you very much.
Let's vote on that oral amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right. That's taken care of.
And Mr. Chair, would you mind if I editorialize for just a moment?
Go ahead.
And finish up.
Yes. Representative North.
Mr. Chair, I understand Representative Pawlowski's frustration. We have been hearing a lot of bills, and we all know that you haven't had a budget target. Some of these, like this one, originated in the Senate, and I agreed to have it heard here out of courtesy to Senator Eakin, because I do serve on the Greater Minnesota Workforce Development Committee. This is an issue that was near and dear to their heart. And if one could look at this a different way, and I know technically you probably can't, but a tax money was allotted for a program that didn't work. It was a tax credit, and that allotment this legislature felt was $2 million was an important try to get this off the ground. So that money was not expended over the last 2 years. Granted, that goes into the general fund, but given that the heart of this body was to spend $2 million trying to get some internships in greater Minnesota, I would argue that it would be worth taking that money out of the general fund and transferring it into higher ed to give this a shot in with a different format. That's what we're trying to do today, to say tax credits didn't work for rural Minnesota for a variety of reasons. Senator Eakin and the Greater Minnesota Workforce Development Committee thought it was worth a try to ask you to consider putting an amount in this committee to have it go through OAG and see if they could administer it as a grant program. So, Mr. Chair, it doesn't have to be $2 million minus $36,000 and $7,000. It could be some smaller amount than that if this committee saw fit. So, Mr. Chair, I bring this forward as an effort to give some strength to businesses in greater Minnesota in order to try internships. Certainly, it will be up to the chair and the body as to whether those find their way into the final bill or not.
Thank you, Representative Norton. We do have the amendment in front of us now, and this is available online for those that don't have a hard copy. We also have a copy now in front of us. And I know you went through this earlier, or I guess staff did. Is there anything further you'd like to add before we take
I wouldn't, Mr. Chair, other than to just make note that it did make deadline.
Okay. Any questions from the members? Hearing none, let's all vote. It's the A1 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? And the amendment is adopted. Anything further, Representative Dorton?
No, Mr. Chair. If there are any questions, I would just renew my motion that House File 3601 be laid over for possible inclusion.
All right, Representative Dorton moves House File 3601 be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Representative Heitzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'd like to move your bill.
I will do that.
All right.
I'd like to motion that we would have House File 3526 laid over for possible inclusion.
All right. Begin.
Very good. I will allow my testifiers to introduce themselves and discuss the bill.
Okay. Welcome.
Mr. Chair, my name is Tim St. Clair. I'm the Vice President of the Minnesota State College Student Association, for the record. I'll begin my testimony. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thanks for the opportunity to address you this afternoon regarding House File 3526, which deals with an important issue for students across Minnesota, the cost of textbooks and other academic course materials. At its core, the issue of choosing a textbook and other course materials is the sole duty and right of faculty. We do not wish to challenge this in any way with this proposal. In fact, we want to empower faculty by providing them with important information regarding open educational resources that can be both academically advantageous to them and provide serious cost savings for students. An OER is an educational resource such as a textbook created for the sole purpose of furthering education in an open source manner. In other words, these are textbooks and other materials shared openly that can be customized to meet individual academic needs of faculty and are often free or very low cost for students. These open resources have proven to be a great mechanism for some faculty and many students. In fact, one local example comes from Century College, where one faculty member changed his textbook in four total sections and saved students $66,000 in 1 year. We can't help but imagine a world where the savings is produced on a much larger scale. This story is a small example why House File 3526 is before you today. I want to thank Representative Heitzman for authoring this bill and allowing a broad discussion of OERs. We know Minnesota needs to optimize the number of skilled workers who are needed and the needed training and education to react to our ever-changing economy. One way to ensure students can graduate quicker with less debt and allowing us to make the most of the generous financial aid giving will be to address some of the sometimes overlooked cost burdens textbooks place on students. This saving becomes even more important when you consider our students currently pay the third highest tuition and fees in the country. National research shows us that textbook costs often change student academic decision-making. We list those statistics in the one-pager provided to you today, and they tell a story of students likely not graduating as quickly due in part to textbook costs. House File 3526 requests two separate appropriations from the state to continue some of the great work already being done on OERs. Section 1 of the bill asks for funds that would be used for pilot programs around OERs. Minsky has already done excellent work by funding 8 of these pilots and may provide additional funding for more OER work in the future. The new funds requested in House File 3526 would supplement these dollars and greatly expand the exposure of OERs on campuses across the state. Thus, has the potential to be a positive partnership between Minsky and the legislature to save students millions. Section 2 of the bill requests a separate appropriation to advertise existing OERs from the Open Textbook Library. Funding and creation of a targeted advertising plan around existing OERs will allow for more exposure and could drive more faculty to adopting existing resources into their curriculum and allow for real cost savings immediately for students. The appropriation in this blank was left. The appropriation was left blank, but our original proposal sought $200,000 for this purpose. Mr. Chair and members, we appreciate the tough job you have in sorting through requests for state funding. We know that you will look to provide to fund programs and proposals that make for smart and efficient use of taxpayer dollars. We know this committee has placed great priority on seeking out ways to increase college degree completion and to address student debt. We believe House File 3526 meets all three of these requirements and will allow great work to be done for a relatively small state investment. Mr. Chair, thanks again for allowing some time to address you today. I'll be happy to stand for any questions you may have.
All right, thank you very much for your testimony. We have... Okay. Do you have another testifier, Representative Heisman? Welcome, and state your name for the record, please.
Good afternoon, Chair Nornes, committee members. My name is Kara Lipke, and I'm the state chair of the Minnesota State University Student Association. I'm also a student at Winona State University. Thank you for taking the time to hear my thoughts today. Thank you, Representative, for introducing this important bill that students care a lot about. Over the past decade, students have been working on their campuses and with legislators to reduce and control textbook costs. State university students that have let us know that textbooks are often unreasonably expensive. In fact, when you start talking to students about their books, it quickly becomes clear that the high cost of textbooks can be an insurmountable barrier to receiving an affordable education. The reason why students support this bill is because it will enhance and expand the excellent work that Minsky, specifically Todd Digby, Minsky System Director for Academic Technology, is doing on open education resources. Since 2014, Minsky has awarded campuses grant money to develop or expand campus-based open textbook efforts. This initiative in its second year engages faculty to explore these options. According to Minsky, recently awarded grants at 8 Minsky campuses have the potential to save students $695,000 during just the first year of implementation. This will be a huge cost savings for students individually. It might allow them to take an additional class and reduce their overall debt or complete on time. We believe it's vital to have conversations with faculty to encourage them to expand the use in their classroom. I want to share my personal experiences with you about this issue. When students get to university, they're faced with the chance to make decisions about how they'll proceed with their education. So we all know there are many options to choose from. I've seen the following textbook choices made. Choose to pay for a month of rent or buy a textbook. Choose to photocopy the pages from a friend instead of buy the textbook. Choose to split a book between 5 or 6 people instead of buying a textbook. Buy 3 months' worth of groceries instead of buying a textbook. Even with these choices, we're still leaving Minnesota State Universities with $35,000 in debt, taking longer to complete our degrees, and burdened with bills that prevent us from contributing to the economy. I have $40,000 in student loan debt, and this issue is personally important to me because I believe that Minnesota State University students are a vital part of our Minnesota economy. Supporting this bill will allow students to keep the roofs over their heads and the food in their stomachs, one book for one person, the best chances of getting a passing grade and ultimately graduating and supporting our economy. On behalf of the 70,000 students I support, thank you for this time, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
All right. Thank you for being here. You may have said it, I might have missed it. When will you graduate?
Excuse me?
When will you graduate?
In May.
Okay. So the 40,000 is, that's it?
That's, no, I'm sure it'll be more after this semester. That's kind of a ballpark.
Okay. Now we'll take questions. Representative Isaacson, you're first up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The only thing I don't like about this bill is I'm not carrying it. This is an amazing bill, and I want to tell you straight up, as a teacher who chooses textbooks, I intentionally, I'm going to have to ask Minsky to close their ears for a second. I intentionally choose books that are old, that are not going to be as much, and I tell them where to buy them that aren't in the library. Because the reality of it is that the textbook that I offer brand new is between $130 and $150, and you can buy them online for between. I had a student this year that bought one of my textbooks for 12 cents. And so it is insane, the kind of contracts. And I want to be clear that it's not necessarily Minsky's fault. It has to do with the way contracts are working with publishers, and that those bookstores, their hands are tied, because they have to follow the contractual rules. But the reality of it is insane, out-of-control pricing. And I do everything I can in my classrooms, and I know other professors that do too, to try to create scenarios where we don't, where I will do and bring outside readings in, incorporate them into a kind of a handbook that they can look at, put it up on our website to make sure they have a chance to get those readings that way. I don't even use the textbook in my public speaking course. And so I try to make sure we limit those costs, because I remember as a student how much you're spending. And I watch, especially, and I'm not saying that the four-year colleges are flush with cash, but my students in the community colleges, they're going to school. Most of them are working real hard, and they're grabbing onto their education with both hands. And this is just one way in which we cause them to be struggling. And so there needs to be a lot of awareness out there of how students can find textbooks in other venues and or provide bills like this to kind of kick us across the finish line. Another problem, though, is Tim, who testified, didn't mention he's at Century College, which is more important than being Vice President of Student Association. So I hope you don't forget that, young man. All right. And I really appreciate the bill and the testifiers. This is phenomenal. Really good work. Thank you.
It is a very important issue, and I think we've talked about textbooks as long as I've been on this committee. And are we going to let Heitzman off without a question? Representative Baird, you want to come through with a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the testifier, do you have a campus bookstore, or do people, and do they have a monopoly on the college textbook market at your university, Winona State?
So I went to Winona State as a freshman and a first-generation college student, and all I knew was the textbook. So I walked into the textbook store, which is right on campus, so it's very convenient. And I gave them my class list, and they gave me a box back of $1,000 worth of books. So if you're a first-generation college student, or this is the only thing that you know, how to get your books. In recent years, I've seen these little things kind of pop up on Facebook where someone will just put up a quick post, hey, I'm selling back this book. The bookstore offered me 50 cents on it. Would you buy it for $50? But that's really all that happens on, and I can only speak from Winona State experience.
Representative Isaacson.
Amazon.com and a couple other places you want to talk afterwards, there are some really great sites to get that. So that's the way to go. Otherwise, you are stuck at the bookstore.
Representative McDonough, Representative Barrett, was it?
Yeah, if I could just follow up. Representative Isaacson mentioned publishers. I actually work for a publishing company, and they're not all bad. We're a nonprofit affiliated with the Drug and Alcohol Treatment Center. But there are a lot of costs in publishing a book, especially a hardcover book. They're not cheap to produce. Then you have an author royalty of, depending on whether it's off net or gross, it's 10 to 25%. Then you have marketing and sales costs. So there are reasons that they cost what they do, although, albeit college, I'm not sure about this market. I think they probably inflate it a little bit more as well. And they don't probably have a lot of volume, which causes a short print run, which causes the cost to go up even more. So a lot into the pricing of it, but I agree with you. Just wanted to add that as further information.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A question for the author, Representative Heisman. In printing textbooks, is there a copyright issues, infringements that any to be concerned about or not? And in dealing especially with maybe even images that are in the copy as well?
We're going to get some help on that one?
Yes.
Okay.
Mr. Chair. Representative. That was actually one of my first questions as well, and he explained it very well.
So. Sinclair, is that the name?
Thank you. The whole idea between an open textbook versus a normal textbook is that it runs on a very special copyright. the copyright was made and with the intent of being able to be openly sourced and distributed for free and edited for free. And so this is not like your typical copyright in which you can get into intellectual property waters. This is more like a copyright where I create this textbook with the full intent to give it to the public for them to use in any way they see fit. Now, there are some stipulations. For instance, you have to credit the source of the information. You can't write something or change saying you wrote something when you didn't. But other than making sure you credit the source, the copyright itself gives much freedom and flexibility in how the material is used. Does that answer your question?
Mr. Sinclair, are you going into law?
No, I'm going to physics, which is okay. Equally as horrible.
Representative McDonald.
And what school do you go to?
I go to Century College.
There you go.
Go Wood Ducks.
Right. No, that answers the question. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Representative Heisman, do you have any final comments?
I would just mention, as a former 4 MinSCU student, that I am also, like Representative Pawlowski, always worried about the money. And this does carry a price tag, but clearly it could have a very significant impact on the overall cost of tuition. And so I would renew my motion to lay House File 3526 over for possible inclusion.
Thank you. House File 3526 will be held over. Thank you. Next, Representative Portman. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Please, let's see. Let's first of all get the bill in front of us. House File 2925. I move that that bill be held over for possible inclusion at the end of the testimony. So, Representative Hortman, you can proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And when I was here before, I kind of jumped the gun. You hadn't scheduled the hearing for this bill, but I talked about it a little bit. When we talk about dealing with student debt and the high cost of college education, there are a few different provisions we can look at that make a big difference for students and families. One, the John Applebaum bill we talked about helps people with existing debt. The bill that I have before you today is about preventing excessive debt in the first place. And one of the ways we can do that is increase the state grants that students receive to assist them in paying for college tuition. What we often hear from our constituents is that the assigned family responsibility is too high. Their families just can't make the kind of contribution that they're expected to make under the existing state grant formula. Another thing we hear from our constituents is that what is assigned for the living and miscellaneous expense allowance is too low. It doesn't match what students are experiencing in their day-to-day lives. And so what House File 2925 does is it reduces the assigned family responsibility, in other words, provides more aid and expects less from families, so we include more middle-class families getting student grants, and it also would increase the living and miscellaneous expense allowance, and that would have the purpose of increasing the state grants. Now, my understanding is that the Office of Higher Education has increased on their own volition this year the living and miscellaneous expense allowance. So I think we had an amendment prepared, but I'm not sure if you got it.
We do.
Okay, and I would imagine what it does, I haven't seen it, is that it probably strikes 9,000 on page 1, line 17, and inserts 9,750, which is higher than what OHE has currently selected, which I think is 9,320. But it creates a new floor, a higher floor that says, hey, we recognize students that it's expensive to live while you're going to school. And with me today, I have one of our stars from North Hennepin Community College to provide testimony.
Representative Portman, would you like to deal with that amendment first?
Sure.
Testimony? Does someone want to offer the A-16 amendment?
So moved.
Okay, Representative McDonald offers the A-16 amendment. Any discussion? I think you've explained it already. Hearing no questions, all those in favor of the A-16 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment has been adopted. Okay,
and
now
My testifier will introduce himself and then provide his testimony.
Okay. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Mr. Chair, for giving me the opportunity to share with you our story and struggles that we have here in two-year colleges in Minnesota. And thank you so much, Representative Hartman, for giving us the chance and not letting us play with our future or play games with our future.
Can you state your name for the record?
My name is Basil Ajuo, and I am the Vice President of the Student Senate at North Hennepin Community College.
We're fine.
I am an immigrant to the United States, and I was born and raised in the country of Cameroon. I was raised by my grandmother. My grandmother never had any chance and opportunity to go to school. My mother never went to school. I'm the first ever in my family to have the chance to go to school. I came to the United States in 2012 to seek for freedom, seek for safety, and take advantage of opportunities and go to school. Life has never been the same since I came to the United States. I have a single daughter. Her name is Sasha. I work three jobs, and I still go poor. I can't pay my rent, I can't pay my bills, and I still fight daily challenges in order to afford for tuition. I've shared my story with students on campus who are the disabled, who are students who have historically been underrepresented in higher education. These are single parents. These are non-traditional students who struggle every day. And we see that the advantages with us students struggling to keep with our daily responsibilities of going to school, succeeding, making a name for ourselves, and making a name for our kids is becoming so challenging. And if we see that, we see that if the portion of the amount that the state can co-fund, it would really help us students to succeed with less struggle and less stress and less stressful, and will give us the opportunity to do work and graduate faster, smarter, and better, and work well to contribute to the workforce of Minnesota. And that is what we have been striving to achieve, and that is why I came here today to share our daily struggle from amongst the 46% of the students that identify themselves in our college like students of color. Not only students of color, all the entire students are really struggling with this kind of problems based on the experiences of having a conversation with them, talking with them, and giving them a chance to be their representative at the level of the Student Senate to have that chance today to testify on their behalf. Mr. Chair, I welcome any other question or any other misunderstood aspect in my message. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for being here. And I think that, you know, we're just glad that you're here, and that story is very meaningful to us. I don't know if you said where you're going to school. Did you mention that?
Yes, I am the Vice President of the Student Senate at North Hennepin Community College.
Okay, and you're there at what, first year, second year?
This is my second year.
Okay.
And in December, I had my Associate of Science degree in Paralegal Studies, and now I'm doing my Associate of Arts degree.
Oh, there's a need for that. So that's a great thing when you're going to be finish school and be able to apply that up in the real world. Representative Portman, did you have anything to add?
Yeah, Basil organized a roundtable of students at North Hennepin Community College to talk about student debt issues in February. And one of the stories that I hope he doesn't mind if I share now, he was talking about one of his weeks at school when he got his child care bill for his daughter, which I believe he said was $120. And then he opened his paycheck for that week, and it was $93. And he was asking himself, you know, where is the difference going to come from, and how are we going to eat? So what we're talking about with these student grant changes that I'm proposing are really small dollar amounts in the big aggregate. But for families that are going week by week, managing expenses like that, little differences are huge. And what a lot of the students said was they can't think about debt. They can't think about the bigger picture of how much they're borrowing to go to school, because if they spent the time thinking about how much they're borrowing and how they'll pay it back, they can't study and they can't take care of their families. They just have to put that in the back of their mind and know that they're going deep into debt and hope that they'll get jobs that make it worth it, that they've incurred the debt.
Members, Representative Pulaski. Yeah.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I'd like staff to remind us when the Office of Higher Ed was given the authority to make these adjustments.
Mr. Williams.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The Office of Higher Education has statutory authority to increase the living and miscellaneous expense if there is an unspent balance to the appropriation. I'm not aware of when that change was enacted in law, but it was not something that was passed in the last biennium of this biennium.
I didn't hear, Mr. Chair, I didn't hear the last part of his statement. Was that passed recently, within the last year?
Mr. Chair, Representative Pulaski, to my knowledge, no. There were some changes to that gave the Office of Higher Education the authority to raise the tuition and fee maximum in the previous, in the 2015 omnibus bill, but the statutory authority to increase the living and miscellaneous expense was not passed in that bill.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to ask staff one more question. If we would raise it to what this bill says, $9,750, could the office then lower it?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Pulaski, I think that I think that the amount that's set in law would supersede the office's authority to change it, and that authority only applies when there's an unspent balance in the state grant program.
All right, Mr. Chair, I think before we do either a policy bill or a supplemental bill, I'm going to ask for some clarification here. Because in the Senate bill, Senator Sharon has already raised concerns about authority given to the Office of Higher Education and how it can manipulate these numbers. I would highly suggest that we take back all legislative authority for how these numbers are spent and that we do not give an agency the ability to manipulate tens of millions of dollars in money when we are not in session. And I'm going to ask for clarification on this. It's already partially in the Senate Finance and Policy Bill, or whatever they're calling their omnibus bill. So, Mr. Chair, this is for future consideration, but there are real concerns here about an agency being able to manipulate money when we are not in session and adjust these amounts.
Okay. Anything further on that particular subject? Any other questions? Okay. We do have someone in the audience. I'm sorry, I didn't see you standing up there.
Yeah, you can do the answer.
Welcome and identify yourself for the record.
Please. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Meredith Burgess. I'm the manager of financial aid research for the Office of Higher Education. And just in response to Representative Pulaski's question, the office has statutory authority. There's statutory authority outlining what the legislature asked the office to do in the event of a surplus or a spending balance within the program. And then there's statutory authority for what the legislature asked the office to do in the event there's a deficit in the program. Both of those authorities are tied only to the second year of a biennium, and they are only tied to the extent to which the office has determined that there is either a spending balance or a deficit in the program. That statutory authority was placed into law, I believe, around 2005, if I'm remembering the statute correctly, following the 2002-2003 recession, where the state grant program exceeded demand and therefore had to cut grants, and there was no authority to make last-minute changes in the grant program. That statutory authority was expanded last year during conference committee. It added another line to the statutory authority outlining that in the event of a spending balance, the office can do two items. The original item, which was to apply a temporary increase to the living and miscellaneous expense allowance. That increase was only authorized in law for a single year, the second year of a biennium. It added a second piece to that in which the office could increase the tuition-free maximums within the program. Again, a temporary increase only allowed in the second year of a biennium. The office must notify the higher education chairs upon doing so. We typically do that in February of each year, allowing the legislature plenty of time to countermand that decision or to pass statute to make a different decision.
All right. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I still have concerns over what is happening within the Office of Higher Ed in these accounts. I think we should be in charge of these accounts, and that authority should be rescinded for the Office of Higher Education.
All right. Any questions of Representative?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. So you mentioned something about in the statute that with a surplus, what by statute are you allowed to do any with the surplus? What authority do you have in dealing with the surplus?
It is in Minnesota Statute 136A, 121 Subdivision 7, I believe A, or possibly B. A. I'm seeing A. In the event that the office has determined that there is a surplus or a spending balance in the program, the ways we can do that is by increasing the living and miscellaneous expense allowance. So the living and miscellaneous expense allowance is essentially one of the cost factors that determines the maximum state grant, and therefore also determines an individual state grant. If we increase the living and miscellaneous expense allowance by $100, a full-time student state grant will increase by $50, approximately half of that amount. But it is based on the enrollment of an individual student. And it is quite a costly change. I'm blanking on the cost right now, though. But a $100 increase is, I want to say it's approximately $2 million a year. So it does spend down a balance quite quickly. Because it is spread across all 100,000 students within the program.
Representative McDonald, explain. You're none? Okay. Any other questions? Oh, Representative, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just feel like, because I kind of picked on one of your members' bills yesterday, the only concern I have with doing this is if we do not put enough funds in the fund to do this, we are going to give the people that have grants more money and less people can get grants. And so I just want to say if we're going to move in this direction, I think it's wise, but we need to make certain that we put enough funds in that grant program so that all current students and frankly, any student that qualifies is able to take advantage of it.
Representative Portman.
Mr. Chair, I hope that you have a very successful night at caucus and that you will fight like hell to get some supplemental budget authority for your committee, because we have a $900 million surplus. $550 million of it we expect to be recurring. And so the question we have to ask ourselves is, with that $550 million recurring surplus, who in our society most needs the help that we can provide with that $550 million in recurring surplus? And I think students like Basel should be at the very top of our list. So I hope that you have a great night in caucus.
Representative Plowski.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to go back for a second. The last change that was given to the Office of Higher Ed was done in a conference committee. It was technically done without any testimony, whatever. It was just done. Senator Sharon has a concern. I have a concern. And I want to just express one other concern. When we incrementally give an office authority over tens of millions of dollars, and we do it over stages, there's no excuse for us to give away that authority. These are precious resources. We know we have two issues that are before us, record student debt and record tuition increases, and the inability of students to, now with declining enrollment, even afford college. So I'm going to renew my hope that this committee will reclaim the authority. We will be in charge of the stipulations of what these numbers mean when they're passed into either statutory law or into session law, and that no agency will have total control over these accounts.
Representative Pulaski, you said that the Senate is moving in that direction.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sharon has already approached me. She said she inserted it into the Senate bill. I intended to talk to you at some point when you knew you had a number of any size, and that if there was going to be an omnibus finance bill, that we would seriously consider rescinding the most recent authority given to the office. But then I think we need to review exactly how much authority this office has.
All right, any further discussion? Otherwise, Representative Hortman, you have the final word.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you very much for listening to the bill today and for listening to my testifier. We appreciate your time and hope that you will find the ability to increase the student grants in your bill this year.
Okay. And McDonald, I think you made the motion. McDonald, do you want to renew your motion?
For the amendment?
Well, no, the motion for the bill as amended.
I just made a motion to amend to adopt the amendment.
I'll move it.
Who made the motion? I did. Who would like it? I'll do it. All right. House File 2925, be laid over for possible inclusion as amended.
Thank you very much,
all right,
Mr. Chair.
There we go. Trying to be a little spread it around.
Mr. Chair, I know that Paul and I would like to come to your caucus and help out rob all the money, so let me know something we can do.
If you do that, it's a permanent
arrangement. It's a permanent shift.
Yeah. Oh.
Representative Thiessen, good to see you. Welcome to the committee. This is a group that's well trained.
Thank you, Mr.
Chair. And I would like to move House File 2500 to be held over possible inclusion. Again, welcome, Representative Peter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's been a long time.
Yes.
Since I've been in front of a committee. So I appreciate you granting a hearing on the bill. Members, I'm going to be pretty brief and let some of the folks who know more about this issue talk, but what this bill does is it puts more money into a program called TRIO. Over the interim, we visited a number of college campuses around the state, and one of the issues that came up, along with tuition and debt and textbooks, was the issue of people getting their ready getting to college ready academically, but not having kind of some of the other skills or experience to take advantage of the college experiences as well as perhaps they might, and as a result, actually making their college experience more expensive. Because they don't get the credits they need in the amount of time that they can in the amount of time that otherwise they could have achieved that, and a whole slew of other impacts. And one of the things that I heard from so many students as I was out there is this TRIO program has been a lifesaver for many, many of them. It's now mainly a federally funded program. And what this bill would be to put state money in to make it available to more students. So basically what the program does, and you can see it right here, it helps students with academic advising, some academic tutoring and instruction, including other students doing the tutoring who are part of the program. So there's kind of a work portion of it that they kind of contribute back to the program as part of the program. Financial aid counseling, which I'm sure you've talked about this year, is a very serious issue for a lot of students and a lot of parents. And then some direct grant aid to students. And so really the idea is to help students make the transition and really succeed once they are in college. And I'm going to now turn it over to Andrew, I think, to give some testimony, if that's okay, Mr. Chair.
That's fine. Please state your name for the record and then proceed.
Thank you very much, Chairman. My name is Andrew Cedar, and I'm the president of the Minnesota TRIO Association. And on behalf of the nearly 300 TRIO professionals in our Minnesota TRIO Association and the 16,000 underrepresented students participating in TRIO programs across Minnesota, we support House Bill 2500 to support state funding for TRIO programs, specifically the TRIO Student Support Services. TRIO programs are federally funded through the U.S. Department of Education, and it provides college access programs like Upward Bound, Educational Talent Search, and Education Opportunity Centers, and college graduation programs like Student Support Services and McNair Scholars. Since the mid-1960s, the federal government supported TRIO programs for underrepresented students to improve college access and college graduation for first-generation college students, students coming from limited income backgrounds, students with disabilities, veterans, and our returning adults. Now it is the state of Minnesota's time to enhance the federal funding model to provide funding support to TRIO programs, as our student success is everyone's responsibility, including the federal government, the state of Minnesota, our institutions and communities, and of course our hardworking students. This bill to support TRIO Student Support Services will enhance the supportive services to students who need the most to graduate, who are in need of these services to graduate. First-generation college students, low-income students from the Iron Range, reservations, rural, urban settings in our communities, who are enrolled in our community colleges and our universities, will benefit from this bill. This will increase the support for students to better navigate the college system, transfer from two-year programs to four-year degree programs, and provide intrusive services necessary for baccalaureate degree completion. Services like intrusive advising, tutoring, mentoring, financial literacy, and direct grant aid to students will help fill the gap in financial aid and related educational expenses. The result of this bill does two important things. It improves college degree completion and assists in limiting the loan student loan indebtedness to provide to targeted support services. We strongly support this bill.
Great. Thank you. Questions? Or do we have another testifier?
Another.
Okay. Go ahead, state your name for the record and proceed.
Hello. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Shelley Siegel. I am first and foremost a TRIO alumni, May. I am also the director of the TRIO programs at North Hennepin Community College in Brooklyn Park. Bazil is one of my students I'm most proud of. TRIO raised me as a professional, as a student. I would not be here today if it were not for TRIO. And I mean that from the bottom of my heart. Student Support Services, the college access program as part of TRIO programs, at North Hennepin currently serves 350 low-income first-generation students and students with disabilities. At North Hennepin, we have an enrollment of about 8,000 students. We can serve 350 with that, with our resources, but we have about 70% of students that could qualify for TRIO. And so we constantly have a waiting list, and we're constantly turning students away. And it's difficult to do that. Our students receive intensive, holistic academic advising, tutoring, and rigorous coursework like math and science, as well as English. And they receive help with career exploration and finding and applying for scholarships, internships, transferring to four-year programs. Depending upon the student, we meet their individual needs. At North Hennepin, the TRIO program has been successful since 1992 in meeting its objectives. Persistence, retention, year to year, 92% average in the last 5 years. Academic standing is 90%. That means students who have a 2.8 GPA or higher. And then graduation and transfer rates at 70%. This is we're doing our job at North Hennepin in our TRIO program and across the state. Similar statistics. Why does it work? And this is our secret. We have a long-standing record of success across the nation. TRIO understands the needs of its students more than any entity on college campuses, and therefore can help them navigate and make informed decisions. Right now we're seeing so much difficulty with students in poverty. This is because our students are not well informed and they end up taking classes that they don't need or they can't pass.
Can I interrupt just one moment?
Yes.
If you back off the mic just a little bit, it'll be easier for everybody to understand.
I'm so sorry.
It's fine, but it's...
I'm actually also a singer and sometimes I tend to eat the mic.
Normally that's how you have to, but these are pretty sensitive mics. So
How's this?
That's much better.
Back more?
That's perfect.
Oh gosh,
perfect.
You should have told me sooner.
I didn't want to interrupt.
Okay, I'm so sorry.
We heard it loud and clear. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
All right, here we go. Yeah. I'll finish just by saying that TRIO staff helps students make good decisions, informed decisions about their financial literacy, about what classes to take, so that they are not ending up with enormous debt. They still incur debt, but we're helping them make good decisions so they're not taking classes where they don't need them and then have to repeat them with our tutoring services, our advising services. I firmly believe this bill would help. TRIO's been flat funded for the last 10 years. Like I said earlier, we cannot support the number of students who need our services on our campuses statewide, nationwide. So we urge you to support this. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We have another testifier. Welcome.
Thank you so much.
State your name, please.
My name is Basil Ajiwo, and I'm from North Hennepin Community College. And I'm here to talk about, I don't know how to describe the wonderfulness of the TRIO program. I can look back to when I came to the United States in December 2012. I came here with nothing more than myself, no family, no friend, and nowhere to live. The only thing I had in my mind was that education is the only way that will open a ladder of opportunities for me and my daughter. And I registered for a paralegal program at North Hennepin Community College. My education was about to stop because it was so hard for me to continue going to school. I was in a new culture. I was in a new educational system. I was in a new environment, and finding a way to succeed in college was so hard. I found TRIO. I shared my story with TRIO. TRIO didn't send me away. TRIO took me under their wings and gave me a place to study. Helped me with my English language classes. Helped me with tutoring. And helped me even at the darkest moment of my life when I was still unable to come to school because my car has broken down. Staff from TRIO had to stay late in the office to complete an application for me to make sure that my car is repaired for me to come back to school and make a name for myself. If not of TRIO, I would have gone this far. And I can remember again, before meeting TRIO, I was almost turning back away from school. And one of the advisors of the TRIO program brought me to our office and told me what it is and how to become who you can be. And today I'm a leader in my campus. Not only in my council, in my campus, but doing work that helps students in my community. And there are many other students like myself who are struggling with economic crisis, with economic challenges, with difficulties that each and every day put them in moments of tears, that they can't afford the benefits that I had when I met TRIO. Whenever I go to the TRIO office, the office always congested. Students are always there waiting to see advisors. Students are always there to make use of computers. But the staff are small to welcome all the students. Sometimes some students have to be turned away to go back. I don't know where these students are going back to. I can remember when I was turning back and someone brought me back. Helping to support TRIO to help larger number of these students will be phenomenal. And that is why I came here today, to share the challenges that I've experienced, not only as an immigrant in the United States, but as someone who really wants to contribute in a workforce and make Minnesota the only home I can call home. And TRIO today is the only family that I can call my family in the United States of America. That is why I came here today, to support this bill for the TRIO program. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. I mean, we're very thankful that you're here, and it's you know, people like you that really make all of this worthwhile. So thank you again for being here. An excellent testimony. Members have any questions? Representative Thiessen.
I should probably stop at that point then. Mr. Chair, I want to thank you for the chance. And I just want to say, you know, as I've talked to students who have helped this program, you hear stories like this a lot. And it's students that are new immigrants. It's students that are non-traditional. In Wilmer, there were two women that were in their 50s who were coming back, you know, after their kids had graduated from college. And had help from the TRIO program making that transition back. At Bemidji, you know, it was your more traditional students, a lot of social work students. And it really does make a difference, and I don't need to tell all you know, the cost of college education and the impact that has. But one of the things that really runs people into debt and gets them into trouble is when they start their school, of course, and don't finish. And what this program is about is making sure people can finish so they can get the jobs that will help them pay back that tuition and make that whole investment pay off. So thank you for your time. I appreciate it, and good luck with the rest of your deliberations. Thanks.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Seeing no other questions, then I would renew the motion that House File 2500 be held over for possible inclusion. Thank you very much. That's our last bill for today. With that, we're adjourned.